Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save big money at
Menards. Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 297 of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast, presented by Overdrive. This is Adam all by myself today. I am actually recording this in the parking lot of my local library because our offices are without power at the moment. We had a crazy windstorm here in Northeast Ohio last night, and as they say, when in doubt, go to the library. So I'm spending my morning here, but being that it's a little bit of a more quiet library, I didn't think I should record this while I'm sitting inside. So the parking lot it is. Happy New Year's Eve. If you are listening to this on Monday when it comes out, I hope you guys had a wonderful end of 2018. Me personally, can't wait for this year to end and move on to 2019 for personal reasons and all that good stuff. It's been a hard year. Not sad to see it in the rearview mirror. Wanted to remind everyone, in case you haven't seen, we've put it everywhere, our website, our Instagram, our Twitter, but we have launched our 2019 Professional Book Nerds Reading Challenge. So we have 12 different tasks for you to accomplish throughout 2019. We have a form that you can fill out. And once you're done with all of your tasks, send us a picture of that, whether it's to our email or any of our social media places, and you will be entered to win a free device from us here at the Professional Book Nerds and Overdrive. So again, you may have seen, there's the Read Harder Challenge that Book Riot does. Our friends at the Reading Glasses podcast are doing their own reading challenge. So if you're a bit of a heavy reader and 12 books seems like a really easy accomplishment for you, maybe do both ours and the Reading Glasses gals one, because theirs is really cool as well. Today's episode is an interview I did with Rebecca Hanover way back in the spring, I want to say. I believe she and I met in New York City when I was there for BookCon. Her book is called The Similars, and it is all about clones in a high school, and it is super cool, super fun. It's a real quick page-turner. I found myself being unable to put it down. She does a really wonderful job at the end of each chapter, making you want to kind of keep reading, almost like there's a bunch of mini cliffhangers in there. So I really think you guys will like that. And we dive into a whole bunch of stuff when we chat. Again, it was hilariously, I think, almost 7 months ago at this point. So yeah, really, really exciting stuff. I loved this book. It was one of my favorite YA books that I read in 2018, but it's a 2019 release, so I couldn't really talk about it very much because it is just coming out this week, actually, if you're listening to this on New Year's Eve. I believe it comes out on the first of the year because that would be a Tuesday. So definitely go check it out. Go borrow from your library. Go buy it. Go do both. Place a hold on it. Request it at your library. Do all those wonderful things. Okay, that's pretty much all I can think of. I'm going to go back and get lost in the stacks here at my local library. Hope you guys have a wonderful new year again and enjoy this episode of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast. Hi everyone, it's Adam again. I'm at Book Expo America and I'm super excited to be talking with Rebecca Hanover, who is a debut YA author, that's a mouthful, whose novel, The Similars, just came out. She's an Emmy-winning former soap opera writer, which we're going to talk about a little bit, and the creator of the Mommy Proof blog, which I love. She's a fellow Harry Potter nerd, which I didn't tell you before we started recording, but you and I have a lot in common on there. And she also somehow managed to write this amazing book while raising a child and growing another one. So, Rebecca, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, so at the time we're recording this, your book doesn't technically come out for a long time, but by the time people hear this, it will be out and about. So can you maybe give our listeners an introduction to The Similars?
Yes. The book is about a prestigious high school, boarding school, in New England, where six clones arrive on the first day of junior year, and they are clones of six kids who already attend the school. Mm-hmm. And the protagonist, Emma, has come back to school. She knows something about clones showing up. She doesn't really care because she's grieving her best friend Oliver's death. He died over the summer. But when she gets there, should I give the punchline?
That's a really good question. Should you give the punchline?
I think it's kind of out there on the summary. So
yeah, I think you're
now I've built this up. Yeah. But when she gets there, there's a clone of her best friend Oliver, uh-huh. And she didn't know he existed. So it's a big shock.
I have a million questions about the book, but I want to say, I was telling you before how much I loved it, but your style of writing is such a way where you had, this is one of those books where I would get to the last two pages of a chapter, and I knew that there was going to be some kind of hook or cliffhanger at the end of the chapter, and I would actively, people can't see me using my hands here, but I would like cover up the end of the second page.
Oh, I do that too when I'm reading. Oh, I totally have to do that because your eyes will dart over there.
Exactly. So they're in one of the first chapters. There is this part where the clones are being introduced to the rest of the student body. And you were going through one by one. And I was like, is the clone going to be of MR main character? Is it going to be of Oliver? Who's it going to be? So I actively took my right hand and like covered it up. And then I did the like where you hold it at the very top of the page and slid down line by line.
Yeah.
I was,
oh. I've totally been there.
My wife saw me doing it. She's like, what are you doing right now? And had to explain it to her. Instead of asking you the like lazy like what inspires you question, just as a general, like, why clones?
You know, the clone idea came out of a phone conversation I was having with my mom, and I think I have no idea now what we were talking about, uh-huh. but we were kind of like, clones, huh, that's interesting. And then I think I kind of suddenly it appeared in my mind, and these clones coming to a high school. So clones specifically was sort of one of those light bulb things that wasn't inspired out of anything specific, but I think I was really wanting to write this type of story where there's sort of something, you know, big world building, life changing kind of event, and then to be able to have these really emotionally relatable characters kind of thrown into that.
The emotionally relatable characters part is something I really loved, because I think a lot of times when you read a high school story, there can be a tendency to sort of like mean girls-ify it, where you just get very flat, like one-note characters, and you do it a really great job of they're being well-rounded. There's more. It's like in Shrek, they're onions, there are many layers to these characters. So, but was that something you were actively, you knew at the beginning while you were writing it, like, okay, I need to make sure people, there's a reason people are interested in not just Emma, our main character, but all the goings on. Like, was that something you were actively aware of while you were writing the words?
Yeah, and I think the TV writing, especially soap writing, when you get down to it, definitely informed that, because it's so character driven. So even though you're kind of putting character, it's actually, you know, it's not that dissimilar really in a way. You're sometimes putting characters in really dramatic situations, but they have to be characters that you would want to sit and talk to at the dinner table.
I actually wanted to ask you, like, from going from soap operas, how different did it feel? Because to me, I didn't watch soap operas, but this did feel very much like there's that high drama. And again, like I said, it's like I can just imagine each of these chapters being going into a commercial break or something like that. Like, how different did it feel for you, other than the fact that this is a solo situation? And
sure, yeah. So it feels like all that training I put to use a million percent for sure, especially in the plotting and the pacing and the suspense and those cliffhangers and then also the emotional sort of depths of the characters. The big difference, I mean, of course, the big difference is it's a book, and it's, as you said, it's a solo endeavor. So it's quite different from a script that you can quickly read through. That was one thing I had to get used to. Like, I couldn't sit down and reread the whole book from where I left off, or I'd be like 5 hours later, you know?
Right.
So you have to keep something bigger in your head kind of all at once, and that was that was like one challenge.
That's actually, that's a really good point, because with books, you do have to, you're writing this big overarching arc of a story. But I mean, I imagine for soap writing, first off, it's every day. You need things. So when you're, when you would write for soap operas, is it you write a scene, or is it more so like one person takes?
What you would, it was pretty much divvied up by episode. So, and there was a head writer who would kind of assign episodes to us, and we would, you know, have a writer's meeting where we would discuss the whole, like, 1 week at a time, essentially. Yeah. So, you would take one script, one episode at a time. So you would write all the characters' voices and everything. But it was definitely, yeah, it's a much, it's a shorter.
Yeah, but so basically, like, you might get, someone ahead of you might write a character, like a plot that's getting something from point A to point B, and you would know what that point B was going
to
be.
And then you'd get them to point C, and then it was almost like what are the, like relay like,
tag
thing.
Oh, I have a
passing
the baton. Yeah.
And then the next person would pick up from C to D, and you would have all, we would all discuss what the bigger plot was and everything. So in a sense, kind of like chapters of a book, you know, sort of piece by piece.
Yeah. Do you think that all of the, soap operas kind of by design, they, each character has usually like some absurd aspect to them, except whether it's their background or that they were thought that they were dead.
Right, exactly.
Do you think that knowing that you had to write each of those different character arcs, like help, or character stories and traits, helped to shape such different characters in your book?
Definitely. I hadn't thought about it in those terms until you just said that, so that's really interesting. But yeah, I think kind of having an ensemble and kind of balancing those threads of, you know, each of their, because each episode of a soap or even a primetime show that has a lot of character, you know, you have all these different threads that you kind of, and, you know, sometimes you're focusing more on character A and sometimes character B, and kind of interweaving all of those definitely is a skill.
So do you think you would love or hate meeting your
kid? I would love it because, oh my gosh, I mean, how fascinating. Plus, I mean, it would be how cool to see the, this scenario in the book played out. I think I would probably be a little bit shocked to see my own, like, mannerisms and that kind of stuff. That's
the part I didn't think about it until I was reading your book, but I think the reason this book will resonate so much with people is no matter how we see ourselves in life, I think we always kind of see ourselves as unique. Like, all of us think we're a snowflake of a person, not to use the snowflake.
The special snowflake.
The special snowflake.
But no, it's true, yeah.
So I feel like if people can force themselves to look at how jarring an experience it would be to look at someone and just be like, oh, wait, we are the same.
Yeah. It would be fascinating. If you can make that happen, that'd be great.
I was just going to say, do you think this is something, I'm going to ask you a scientific question, do you think we'll see this kind of like in our lifetime?
So I have an answer for that. My sister is a neuroscientist, and her husband also, my brother-in-law. And when I first got this idea, I was, you know, letting it marinate in my head and thinking about it. And at some point I called my sister and I said, what do you think? Like, do you think this is at all, you know, plausible or possible? And one of them said, yes, absolutely. Yeah. They're going to be human clones. And one of them said, no, no way. But that was enough for me to, as long as, all I needed was
one.
Yeah, all I needed was one scientist to say, I think there's, that has legs.
When the first one says, I just imagine when the first one says yes, the second one starts to answer. It's like, your question, you know, your answer is no longer valid. I heard one yes.
It's like, I don't care. Yeah. Totally, because with sci-fi, all you really need to be able to do is, like, suspend your disbelief.
Right.
So what's interesting is, sort of a sub-question to that is, will it be possible, but will it actually happen? Like, those are actually different questions, because I suppose from, like, an ethical standpoint, or maybe they wouldn't choose to do it, right?
Which is, and
it's kind of interesting.
I'm glad you brought that up, and I'm glad that that's in the book, too, because it isn't just people being upset, and they're being... We're talking about layers. It's not just people not liking the fact that there are clones of them. It's not people, like, there are things that happen in this book that are, would set themselves up to be like a mystery, but there's more to it. There's
right.
The debate of
it's not, like the ethics behind it. And
yeah, I don't know if it's the Alien movies, but it's like there's this, I think it's the Alien movies, but it's like it's not whether or not we can do something, it's
but
if
should we should.
Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely.
So you were doing this, and I saw some posts on your website as well, on your blog, Mommy Proof, about how like you wrote this novel one day at a time. And you were putting on there basically like, okay, I got down this many words today, and I just kept my butt in the seat and I did it.
You did your research?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Can I tell you, doing this job, I always feel sort of creepy. Like, sometimes I'd be like, I saw a picture of you in Hawaii, and they're like, that was from like 6 months ago. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I was on your Instagram. I'm trying to find things. But I don't know if you meant it to be inspiring, but I feel like for writers, like, that's a great tip to give them is... You have to write a novel today. You have to write.
Right. And people say, I mean, I did not come up with this. Someone else brilliant says, like, butt in chair, basically, is kind of the key to getting a book written. Or, I mean, really anything.
I think you said it, and you can take full credit for it.
But I did post. I was like, day 200. And, yeah, it was a little bit at a time. And then it kind of became more all at once. Like, there was a lot of time where it was just... get my butt in the chair.
Yeah,
for sure.
Are you a planner or a planner? Or a cancer planner?
Definitely a planner. I've become a planner. Mm-hmm. Working on the soap opera turned me into a planner, which was like the greatest thing because an outline is hugely important. And I mean, I think for me, the final product is always going to deviate some from it as I work things out. But yeah, having that structure is super, it's great. Save the cat. Any screenwriters out there who know Save the Cat, that's a big one.
What's it? It's Chekhov's gun, kind of like a similar, like if you put it something out in the beginning.
Totally.
Is there a character or an experience in this book that you found really challenging to write?
Good question. Probably Madison, because she has some views, not to say too much about it, but she has some views that are pretty... unacceptable, I guess I should say.
It becomes pretty clear when you meet her early on when you're not supposed to enjoy her.
And so, I mean, on the one hand, she's really fun and deliciously kind of, you know, villainous in a way. But that's, I think that's hard too. Mm-hmm. I think, especially the parts where her perspective is something I don't agree with. You know, that was harder to make that work. But
that's a really... good point that I don't think a lot of people think of when they're writing a book. Like, there's a lot of things you have to write that
might not be aren't representative of you, but you know, it's part of it's super important to the story.
Oh, were you able to detach yourself though? I'm just imagining some writer like furiously typing a character and
then being like pissed,
so angry about it. Like,
I want to punch you in the face,
son of a bitch, I hate you.
All
right, so we can't not talk about Harry Potter.
Okay.
I saw the era. So, first off, given. I just have a bunch of random Harry Potter questions.
Okay. Oh, I hope they're not quick.
No,
as long as they're not trivia. Because huge as of a fan as I am, my young children have robbed me of like some of the stuff in my
brain.
No, like,
I can't remember. Yeah. Do you have a favorite character though?
Oh, Hermione. I mean,
I have this long-standing battle where I love Ginny, and I don't think she gets proper credit, and she's just like...
She is badass, you're right. She kind of... Hermione sometimes overshadows, you know?
I feel like there's so many things that she does that are crazy impressive, and it's just like...
Good point.
Do you have a favorite subplot of the Harry Potter books?
Oh my gosh. I'm just going to say the first thing that jumps into my head was I love book 3 with the time turner.
Yes.
Like, I've probably reread that a million times. And what's the book? See, now I don't even remember. With the memory. No, the luck.
Fearless Felicis. That is 6.
Thank you. See, my memory. I swear I've read them all, but I can't even. And then does Ron think that he drank it to have good luck for the Quidditch?
Got tricked into he doesn't think he drank it. Hermione thought that Harry gave it to him, and then he thought he drank it.
But
and so he thought he was lucky.
Yeah. But, oh, the, all of them, yeah.
I feel like there's so many aspects of the book that are such awesome life lessons. Like, when Harry wins a bunch of money from going, like, from doing the whole Goblet of Fire and everything.
Yep.
And just without question, just gives it to the twins to like, start the business.
I know. Awesome it's thing. So... Talk about it's great character. I mean, so that's why those cool. books are so...
Yeah. When you aren't reading Harry Potter or writing, what are the books that you enjoy reading?
Oh, I mean, basically YA.
Yes.
Just across the board. Mm-hmm. I just finished Scythe, is that how you pronounce it? And Thunderhead.
Yeah.
Those two were
really
amazing.
Good.
I'm reading Fureyborn now, which I'm super excited about. I just started. Cannot wait. So excited. So yeah, I mean, basically YA. And then my other guilty pleasure is Ruth Ware.
Oh,
I don't know
yeah.
if you like her books, but I already read The Death of Mrs. Westaway.
Yes.
Like, I got, like, 2 days ago. I was reading it on the flight.
Yeah.
She's awesome. I have, like, a little writer crush on her.
We actually, my co-host, Jill, interviewed Claire Legrand at a previous show that I wasn't at. So she was on our show recently, and then actually Ruth Ware, my co-host is a massive Ruth Ware fan, and we got a pitch from her publisher, I think it's Penguin, I don't remember, and they're like, would you guys like to interview Ruth Ware? And I went over to her desk and was like, listen, I would love to be a part of this, but I feel like I'd be stepping on your fangirling toes.
So I just
let her
see you
have that one. But yeah, they're wonderful.
She's so cool. I know her books are just like delicious.
Uh-huh.
What
are there things in kind of the YA world, because there seems to be like cycles of there was vampires everywhere, then there were zombies. Like, is there a type of story that you are drawn to, like whether it's YA fantasy or
science
fiction?
I think I'm most drawn toward books either dystopian or sci-fi, or something where the world is a little bit different than our own.
Yeah.
Or like in Scythe and Thunderhead. Mm-hmm. And then, I love contemporary as well. I mean, who doesn't love a great, John Green? Or, I never got on the Becky Albertalli bandwagon, so I'm reading Simon and the Homo Sapiens. I know. I don't know where I've been. I don't know.
I'm reading it now.
I'm reading it right now and loving it.
Good save.
It's literally open. I can prove it to you. It's open in my Kindle.
Publicist almost just walked away from the table.
So I love... There's so many amazing books. Sometimes it's hard to keep up. And for a little while, I actually had to stop myself so I could finish writing. I have a little bit of a problem. Read all day.
It's a good problem to have.
But anyway, so, and then, I enjoy fantasy too, but I think, it's all good.
Yeah,
it's all great,
that's okay.
Honestly.
I would rather have you have a rambling answer than be like, I don't read any of this.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Oh my God. They're all... special in their own way. No, they're all amazing.
This book is set in the, I guess, kind of near future. Was there ever any concern over creating aspects of a world that doesn't exist yet, and then wondering, like, looking back on it in a couple of years, being like, oh, well...
That didn't happen.
That never happened. Yeah, I was like, was there ever any thought about that?
So, my father-in-law is actually a futurist.
Yeah.
And so I get... A little bit of dinner table conversation is around like this kind of stuff, and my in-law, extended family, like they have, they accept very readily that we're all going to be in self-driving cars in like 10 years. They're very quick to like accept all this stuff because it's kind of part of what my father-in-law studies or whatever. So I think some of what's in the book could be wrong, but.
Yeah.
Whatever, it's okay, but
yeah.
But I do feel like I've learned to kind of accept that a lot of that might be true. So I don't know, it'll be interesting to see the specifics of it, but I do think the bots and we're already starting to see a little bit of it.
Alexa. Yeah, I was gonna say, I want a Dash. I want.
Yeah, I know he's like a step up from Alexa.
Exactly. So yeah, I don't think this gives it. You learn about Dash very early on.
Yeah, it's fine.
The main character has. It's like a kind of like a watch, sort of a thing, and
totally like a smart watch.
But it's just the way that it's artificially, it has artificial intelligence, like it learns, and it's kind of sassy, and I enjoy Dash.
Oh, thanks, that was fun. He was fun. Speaking of He was fun to write. Yeah. So yeah, it'll be, I don't know, that's interesting. In 20 years, we'll see whether any of it was right, but
I'll be bummed out if there aren't plums for everybody.
I know.
Okay, so towards the end of our show, we like to do what we call the Nerd Nine. They are just lighthearted questions, because I like alliteration. So, the first one is, you kind of mentioned this, but do you remember the last, what's the last book you finished reading?
The Death of Mrs. Westaway.
Do you have a favorite place to read?
Lying in bed.
It's so funny that we get half of the people that say that, and the other half, I can't read in bed because I fall asleep. It's so funny.
Oh, that's
even weird. And then someone else just told me that they can't read in bed because their significant other yells at them for staying up too late, which I enjoyed as well.
Yeah.
Do you remember the book that made you kind of fall in love with reading?
Ooh. That's a hard one remember. A Roald Dahl book or a kids book. For some reason, though, the book actually coming to mind is Jane Eyre, which I was read much later in life, in like 8th grade. But that book made me want to write or something. Uh-huh. I don't know. I just love that. Love that book.
Yeah, I kind of, mine is always The Outsiders. I always feel like that and Where the Red Fern Grows.
Tree Grows in Brooklyn. Oh, there's so many good ones.
But. Yeah, Where the Red Fern Grows, some of the books can make me cry my eyes out.
Yeah, oh my God.
Yeah. What's one place you like to or you would want to travel that you haven't been to yet?
Greece.
I've got non-committal. You are I guess Greece.
Greece. I'll say more. Australia. Okay.
There you go.
Both of those ones. Okay.
Do you have a favorite holiday to celebrate?
Probably Halloween.
Are you a coffee or a tea person?
Both. I like coffee as well as matcha.
Matcha's very good. I was gonna hold you over the coals for a minute there, but I'll let that slide.
Yeah. Coffee sometimes, I'm a little bit almost allergic to it, so I love it. But matcha, I was here for 2 seconds, in New York, and found a matcha bar immediately. I was so excited. I got a matcha latte. It had macadamia milk.
Oh,
I'm from San Francisco, so I love all the.
When we stop recording, I'm gonna ask where that is because if it's around here, I'm going to get one of those.
I'll tell you.
Lost my train of thought. That sounds so good. Are you a cat person or a dog person?
Cat.
You can't waffle on that one. Jill is a cat person. I'm a dog person, so we can't have a sitting on the fence answer there, but
cat,
it's okay.
Cat.
Do you have a favorite food?
Sushi.
San Francisco, that makes sense. If you could have dinner with one person, alive or dead, who would you pick?
J.K. Rowling. That was easy.
You and me both. That's awesome. My other two are always Jim Henson. I'm a massive Muppets fan. And then Mel Brooks, just because we're fast at comedy. Last question for you. What do you hope readers take away from reading your book?
Mostly I just hope they're still thinking about it later. The way I'm still thinking about that Ruth Ware book I read the other day, just thinking about these questions of identity and, there is going to be a second book. So hopefully they'll be thinking about it enough to still want to buy the second book. Kind of pondering those big questions about ourselves and the parts of the book about tolerance and acceptance and those themes, I think hopefully sort of stay with readers.
That's awesome. Rebecca, thank you so much for joining
us
today.
Thank you so much, Adam. This was a blast.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from Overdrive.com, and our library friends can add these titles to their collections and marketplace.
A lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Califato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.